Look, Discussions of Truth is free, it's independent, it's uncensored, and it's never edited. Why I use Anchor.fm? Because podcasting today is the new medium for media. Like Ray McGovern said, former CIA agent, almost 3 decades in the agency. He said, Ian, what you're doing today is the last frontier. And that's why you, listening to this, yes, you, need to start a podcast now. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. Best of all, it's 100% free and ridiculously easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise on your podcast. That means you can get paid to podcast right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading this ad. Go to anchor.fm/start. Get the word out, because your word is the word. StopMassMedia.com. Discussions of Truth. I am Ian Trottier. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to Discussions of Truth. I am your host, Ian Hamilton. Trottier, you are tuned into Wynnewood Radio. And as always, I broadcast on Wednesdays, 5 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time, pushing the envelope. The show incepted as the Florida Sun and Spray Show, and that was an attempt to gather interest on really a more of a local effort to get the population of Southern Florida interested in investigating the various pesticides that are used in this state. Chem-Tox, that's chem-tox.com. Was an early partner of mine. They took on Monsanto out of Tampa and won. This all had to do with a spray about 2 years ago now to combat the Zika virus called Naled. The road that I was led down in my investigation more than opened my eyes as it led into the various fields of petroleum run by the Rockefellers and the various ties therein. We bring on subject for a second time since the inception of this program. Again, now pushing that 2-year mark, getting close to it. 9/11. Christopher Bolin. First guest on this program to speak about 9/11. Today, we try to refocus a focus, if you will, on 9/11 as we invite and as we receive Richard Gage onto Wynnewood Radio. He's an AIA a member of the AIA as an architect, American Institute of Architects, founding member of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. This guy spent three decades, if I've got that right, in the industry, architectural industry, and he's headed multi-million dollar projects. He has a major issue with the report, the 9/11 Investigation Commission report, fire or controlled demolition. So if that doesn't kind of hit the mainstream, then you need to kind of refocus your focus. 3,000 architects are involved in his campaign. Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, and that's ae911truth.org. This is no light skin effort here. Richard's going full bore. He means business. And that is exactly the type of individual we invite with open arms onto Discussions of Truth. Next week, folks, next week we bring on two-time member of the U.S. House of Representatives. She's a former member of Congress as a Democrat. Then she switched to the Green Party in 08 and ran for president. We are confirmed to receive Cynthia McKinney. She was Georgia's first black woman to represent that state in the U.S. House. Dr. McKinney will bring on a concept of what is an effort to unify and cohesively bring together groups that promote positive behavior from different walks of life. And she'll also talk about her book that is scheduled to very quickly be released, if it hasn't already been, and that is How U.S. Creates Blank Hole Countries, and that's an S word there. That alludes to a comment made by Donald Trump, and I think he referred to, for instance, Haiti as being one of those countries. So we'll hear Cynthia's side to her opinion on how the United States creates these crap hole countries. Maybe Hillary Clinton at some point would give her side. I don't know. We can certainly invite her and bring her on. But she McKinney in 01 was awarded the Peace Through Conscience Award from the Munich American Peace Committee. That's MAPC. For her efforts to challenge U.S. and NATO war policies. Bravo, Cynthia. Bravo. Okay? So next week, we bring on Cynthia McKinney. We will follow that up later in the month with Gretchen Peters. Gretchen Peters is a former ABC News correspondent. She heads currently something called the Satel Project. Basically, Gretchen, she would deliver her research on the opium trade to people like the Navy SEALs and the Pentagon. She'll talk about her book called The Seeds of Terror, how drugs, thugs, and crime are reshaping. Now the 17 years now? 17 years. Your taxpayers, our taxpayers have gone to fight the Taliban? She'll talk about something called the Haqqani Network. Two papers, and I've got them listed on my website. That's iantrottier.com, iantrottier.com. You just click the radio tab, and there you get into all the past guests that I've had. And I've got two papers listed up there under a bio for Gretchen. United States Institute of Peace is one of the papers I'd like to direct you to. How Opium Profits the Taliban, very important, very key, right? West Point's Combating Terrorism Center, Haqqani Network. That's another paper. Alfred McCoy, former guest on this program. He is a member of, he's a writer for Tom Dispatch. What's interesting about Alfred McCoy is he got a knock on his door from the CIA when he went to publish his work on what he had learned about the opium trade. Yeah, he spent time in Southeast Asia, returned to New Haven, and the CIA wanted him to hand over his research. He took him to court, and he won. So that book stands as the gold standard, if you will, of understanding that drug trade. And so we will kind of possibly be able to connect some dots, maybe, who knows, with Gretchen. Maybe she'll understand a little bit about what Dr. McCoy has done in far as investigating the opium trade. Being rescheduled for the program is Daniel Estulin. He was scheduled to appear on the program last week. We brought in Joel Skousen. Probably mispronounced that again, Joel. Pardon me. He's a former Marine Corps fighter pilot, and he's very knowledgeable. So, in Daniel's place, we had Joel. But Daniel being rescheduled, we'll talk about La Trastienda de Trump behind the scenes. What's interesting at that is about some of Daniel's work. And by the way, if you're not familiar with Trinday, please, I don't want to pitch anything that isn't necessary. But Trinday, and that's all I'm going to say, is a pretty interesting source to kind of give alternative views to things, okay? And that's what we're all about pushing. I'm all about pushing the envelope, right? Because if you get sprayed by a pesticide that's banned by the European Union and it's a known neurotoxin, you have the CDC's on the phone to your city council via loudspeaker and they're saying it's harmless, then you should be able to know what you should be able to investigate and look at some alternative views on things, right? You should be able to do that. Nalid was used here. It's a known neurotoxin, as I mentioned. It's also known to cause microcephaly. But yet, so is the Zika virus. So, catch 22, not sure. But what's interesting about Daniel is that he talks about elite groups, and these do exist, folks. The Bilderberg groups, if you will. He talks about that. But what is interesting is that these international bankers, as Naomi Prinz spoke about, and she didn't point any fingers, but what is interesting about some of these international bankers is that Daniel writes about them, and it caught the attention of Fidel Castro. Whoa, interesting. Okay, wow. What did Fidel Castro have to say about Estulin's work? So we'll hear from Daniel. Daniel's rescheduled him, and Kevin Shipp, former CIA agent. He'll speak about the NSA. Here on Wynwood Radio, we're scheduling him. Joel Skousen last week, and before that, if you didn't catch the program, Sandy Rosenthal spoke about Hurricane Katrina and how the Army Corps of Engineers, she traced IP addresses right back to the Army Corps engineer that was slamming her for questioning how that dam was insufficient. 17-foot holes were drilled, yet they should have been 50. Saving money, were they? I don't think so. Some of these power brokers, as you say, that control things, they have an agenda. By the way, the United Nations, yeah, they have something called, they have various agendas. Look into it. Agenda 2030, Agenda 2020, sure, okay? They've got ideas on how to shape the way you live your life. Why? Because they can. And they will continue to unless you do something about it. Robert Bridge also joined us a couple weeks ago. He's a former editor of the Moscow News. And prior to him, Wolf Richter of Wall Street. And again, Naomi Prinz. Ray McGovern. The list goes on, folks. You know, we've had some incredible guests that have joined this program. We march onward and upward. Stephen Kinzer, he's a member of the Watson Institute. at Brown University, I believe it is. John Perkins, former hitman for economic hitman, he referred to as a CIA, and then Senator Mississippi Senator Chris McDaniel. These are all former guests, and all of these. If you don't catch these live, all of these are uploaded into iTunes. Not all of them, but most of them are in iTunes, Google Play. Many in the Spotify, absolutely all of them are in Mixcloud.com. The large majority are in SoundCloud, and every single one of the past episodes can be accessed on IanTrottier.com. Absolutely every single one since the inception. So a couple of issues here, maybe a couple questions, right? 9/11, should we even question that? On September 11, 2001, nearly 3,000 people were killed. 400 were police officers and firefighters in the terrorist attacks on the World Trade Center in New York City, the Pentagon building in Washington, D.C., and in a plane crash near Shanksville, PA. Okay, so 3,000 altogether were killed. On any given workday, up to 50,000 employees worked at the World Trade Center Twin Towers, and an additional 40,000 passed through the complex. That's on any given day. After September 11 attacks on the World Trade Center, the rescue and recovery cleanup of the 1.8 million tons of wreckage from the WTC took 9 months. Big money for an insurance company, right? Shorenstein, didn't he pull Building 7? He can catch video footage of him calling for that Building 7 to be pulled. What's that all about? Okay. The attack on the World Trade Center on 9/11 resulted in the largest loss of life by a foreign attack on American soil. 18 people were rescued alive from the rubble. There's some interesting. Look, while video accounts of WTC attack aired immediately, no video footage of the Pentagon attack was publicly released until 2006. So Richard Gage has an issue with the commission report and what was released in it, how it was conducted. We'll see. We'll hear from him in moments, and we will cut to a break and bring Richard on the program. You've tuned in to Wynnewood Radio. I am your host, Ian Trottier. You can follow me on Twitter, follow me on Instagram, and again, we are an independent radio station. If you'd like to contribute, please do. Wynnewood Radio, Ian Trottier, and I'll be right back with you.
Your country needs you, but you know it never will. So back up your troubles and who's stolen everything. Don't dilly-dally, boys, rally round the flag. Give us a daily bread, give us a daily bread.
In individual slices,
in individual slices.
All right, so welcome to discussion. I'm back. We're back from a break. We have Richard Gage with us. Again, he is the Richard. Are you the founder of the Architects and Engineers from 9/11 Truth? Are you a co-founder? Founder? Tell us a little bit about yourself. We welcome you to Wynnewood Radio.
Thank you. It's nice to be here. I'm a member of the American Institute of Architects, and yes, I founded Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth about 12 years ago, and we have a desire and a petition to get a real investigation into the destruction of all three World Trade Center skyscrapers on 9/11. We have 3,000 engineers signed on to this petition demanding this new unimpeachable investigation with subpoena power. And so I'm looking forward to sharing with your audience, Ian, the evidence that we have assembled from various sources, much of which has been actually compiled since day one of 9/11 by many diligent researchers among the millions of 9/11 and activists in the 9/11 Truth Movement.
Thank you. Now, Richard, you seem like an all-American, average guy. You've been an architect for now about three decades. Taking a adverse stance, if you will, or an alternative stance on 9/11 comes with a lot of resistance. What was it for you that began your question, if you will, of how the investigation was conducted? What was it to you that said, as an architect, that said, okay, hold on a second, not everything's adding up here. I've got to take a closer look.
Well, at first, beginning with the morning of 9/11, I was in shock and awe, like the others, other Americans. We were in a state of panic here. I saw the towers coming down, but something was wrong with it, but I didn't know, you know, what. They're telling us, okay, it came down by jet plane impacts and fires. And so I'm just going, all right. But later, about 5 years later, I heard on the radio David Ray Griffin, one of the chief researchers in the 9/11 Truth Movement, who's now written 10 books on the subject. He was being interviewed on the radio, and I was hearing all this evidence that I had not heard anywhere in the mainstream media, not from the American Institute of Architects, not from our government, not the official reports. We're talking about witnesses of explosions, more than 100 of them, orally recorded by the FDNY Fire Department in New York. And they are talking about sounds of explosions, flashes of light, many of them heard and seen before the towers came down, immediately before.
Wow.
And this is just the beginning of this kind of awakening here. I learned that there was a third tower that came down on 9/11, this being World Trade Center Building 7, a 47-story skyscraper that collapses in the afternoon of 9/11, wasn't hit by an airplane, and yet here's this building that came straight down into its own footprint in the afternoon at 5:20, it as fast as a bowling ball falling out of the sky.
Uh-huh. Right, yeah. The Building 7, and I think that's an what happened there? What do you know in your research? What happened with Building 7 as far as you know?
Well, we know a lot.
It wasn't hit by a plane.
We know that. We also know that it took 7 years for NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, who was tasked by Congress to explain all three collapses to the American people, that they didn't explain any of the three. It was just a massive cover-up of the actual evidence that we provide. The first of all, regarding Building 7, what we know is it came down at free fall acceleration. Now, that in 7 seconds, this building is destroyed from top to bottom. It falls like a house of cards. And so in order for a building to fall symmetrically and at free fall, all the columns on each of the floors, and there's 80 of them, have to be removed all at once. Otherwise, the building begins to tip over. It falls to the path of least resistance. And so here is this agency taking 7 years to come up with this story, hoping everybody will forget about the collapse of this tower by the time they get around to issuing the final report. And what do they say? Normal office fires brought this building down.
Normal office fires. And how were those started? Any idea as far as that report goes?
Well, everyone speculates that it's from some of the debris that did hit Building 7.
Sure.
NIST acknowledges that this debris, while it may have started fires, is not a significant factor in the building's collapse. They have this theory under the East Penthouse, which falls 6 seconds earlier. They have this up at the top of the building. They have this theory that a column 79 remained was rendered unbraced by the internal collapse of about 9 floors around it, starting with floor 12 and on down, because of the expansion of long span beams pushing a girder off of its seat, and then causing this progressive collapse inside the building, which then culminates, they say, in the collapse of the East Penthouse. Actually, they have this theory suggesting that the entire inside of the building collapsed before the outside building did, but that without hardly any deformation on, well, without any deformation of the exterior perimeter structural steel system. I mean, these beams are rigidly connected to the beams and columns on the exterior. It would have crumpled like a beer can if there was an internal collapse. We all would have known it, seen it. There would have been massive breaking of granite panels and windows and so forth. So the whole theory is flawed from beginning to end. And we cite this on our webinar, which is free on YouTube for everybody to see. The actual documentary we made called 9/11 Explosive Evidence, Experts Speak Out. Because we've assembled 40 high-rise architects, structural engineers, metallurgists, chemists, physicists, controlled demolition experts. They all lay out this evidence on this landmark documentary. And it's all there for everybody to see, Building 7 and also the Twin Towers.
Now, you're not alone. There are some other fairly high-profile Americans that question this commission report. For instance, Richard Clark, who was chief of America's anti-terrorism efforts under both Clinton and Bush, is one of them, and also dean of the law school of Rutgers, John Farmer. Are you aware of those two individuals?
Oh, yeah, and Richard Clark is on record of believing the official story, even if he questioned it at some point. Later, he folded. John Farmer is the attorney for the 9/11 Commission, and he says there was a decision at some point to not tell the truth to the American people.
And where does that decision come from? Is he quoted as saying where that decision came from? We're talking about Oval Office decision.
Well, it's from higher than him. We don't have that information. But the 9/11 Commission chairs are on record saying that they were lied to repeatedly by the CIA, by the Bush administration, by the Air Force. They have no faith in the document that was produced by Philip Zelikoff after they were all done questioning. And Philip Zelikoff is a Bush appointee. So we have very little, whose PhD was in the creation of public myth.
Ah, interesting. Aha. Okay, wow. Okay, that's an interesting one there. Richard, you are an architect. What's the largest building for listeners to kind of identify with your mindset and where you're coming from? What's the largest project that you've worked on in comparison to the World Trade Center? I mean, that was a massive business building complex. But give listeners a relation to what you've personally worked on.
Well, first of all, it's not about me personally. It's about the evidence and about the 3,000 architects and engineers that we've assembled demanding a new investigation, which include a dozen high-rise architects and 100 structural engineers, among many, many other technically qualified people and physicists and scientists, in addition to the 3,000 mounting up to 20,000 other lay people and these scientists and physicists, etc. So regarding myself, I've worked on a $400 million project in Las Vegas with 1,200 tons of fireproof steel framing, including two mid-rise towers.
Okay, so you can identify from a structure, you personally can identify from a structural standpoint what happened here. So when these traits, is it, in your opinion, is it possible for two airplanes to pulverize two buildings like that?
Well, yeah, let's talk about the Twin Towers. No, everyone says, and even those supporting the official story, that the impacts of these planes were produced fairly minimal damage, that it was mostly the fires afterward.
Okay.
But even NIST acknowledges that the jet fuel, 90% of it burned up outside the building. The rest was gone in just 10 minutes. It was over 45 minutes to an hour and a half that these buildings came down after that. And so NIST cites a theory that fires caused the sagging of these floors, and then that pulled in the perimeter columns, and then the upper portion, in the case of the North Tower, above the point of jet plane impacts, drove the rest, and that upper portion is just 15 stories, but it apparently drove the rest of, according to the official story, down the rest of the building down to the ground in just a dozen seconds, and then destroyed itself. But even that theory holds no water, because none of the videos or photos show any portion of the building after 4 seconds. It's been destroyed. After that, the photos and videos show nothing pushing anything down. It is just a series of thousands of explosions hurling 4-ton structural steel sections laterally at 60 miles an hour, landing up to 600 feet in every direction. While that's going on, below that, 20, 40, 60 stories down below that, we have these isolated explosive ejections, which are blowing pulverized materials out of the building. They're very available. I already mentioned the more than 100 firefighters on record citing explosions and flashes of light prior to the building even beginning to collapse. And then we have also because these fires were very much diminished, indicated by the thick black smoke in both of the towers and the limited flames. So we have not enough heat to actually melt steel, but there's evidence of molten steel and molten iron in the aftermath of all three towers, including Building 7.
Wow.
And jet fuel can't account for that even in the Twin Towers. Jet fuel burns, according to its manufacturer, only 600 degrees Fahrenheit in open air. So where's all this incredible heat coming from, causing the pouring of molten iron out of the South Tower just 10 minutes prior to its collapse? That takes 2,800 degrees Fahrenheit, more than 3, 4, 5 times the temperatures these fires can even get to. So that's just the beginning, though. There's a river of steel pointed out by the structural engineer of the World Trade Center himself, Leslie Robertson, flowing. And there's dozens of witnesses in our documentary that point out that there's molten iron dripping off the ends of the steel beams. So they say molten steel. It turns out to be molten iron because there's been a lot of tests done on it, including by FEMA, which says there's a hot corrosion attack on the steel. Sulfur formed during this with molten iron attacking the steel. Well, none of this ends up in the NIST report, even though it was very well documented by FEMA and placed in an appendix in their building performance assessment report in 2002. But NIST took over that investigation and threw out that evidence, even though the NIST co-project leader, John Gross, himself is seen in a photograph picking the very piece of steel off the pile that he gave to FEMA that they ended up including in this appendix and documenting a Swiss cheese corrosion. That does not happen in normal office fires, but it is the result of thermite. Thermite is an incendiary used by the military to cut through steel like a hot knife through butter. And this has found evidence of thermite, not only in the dozens and dozens and dozens of reports of molten metal and temperatures documented by Bechtel over 2,800 degrees, and Jonathan Barnett, the FEMA author, saying 4,000 degree temperatures responsible for the partial evaporation of the ends of the steel beams.
So you are it sounds like you are you're absolutely confirmed in your thinking that that there were nano thermite explosive devices planted in that building to aid in the demolition of it.
Well, thermite is an incendiary, and it works by means of heat, producing 4,000 degree temperatures, which can explain the phenomena that we've just been discussing. It also, with adding sulfur to it, it becomes thermate, much more effective at cutting through steel, which explains the sulfur, which NIST documented but could not adequately explain. Actually, they say it must have come from the gypsum board, which has calcium sulfate in it. But gypsum board has been used for 100 years to protect steel. It's never turned around and attacked the steel that it's designed to protect. So that's a lame answer there. And we also have in the dust samples documented by the U.S. Geological Survey in their massive particle atlas of all of the dust samples, doing toxicological studies of them, as well as environmental engineer R.J. Lee. They both independently find billions of previously molten iron microspheres, the diameter of a human hair. They can't explain where these come from, but they do a great job of documenting them. It's a signature element of all the World Trade Center dust. In other words, it's not even World Trade Center dust unless it has all of these previously molten iron microspheres. Well, how did they get there? Well, under explosive conditions, thermite, an incendiary, releases molten iron and aluminum ash or oxide as its byproduct. So that explains it. And not only that, but we, a team of international scientists led by Niels Harrit in Copenhagen, find in all of the dust samples they collected that were independently given to them by New Yorkers, they find the same curious red gray chips in all these samples. And they document these very carefully. And it turns out that these dual-layered chips, red on one side, gray on the other, the red side, as they zoom into it 50,000 times with a nuclear microscope, find what? The ingredients of thermite. Nanothermite, because it's at the nanoscale. This is a very sophisticated material with iron oxide rhomboidal crystals intermixed with aluminum platelets in this matrix of oxygen, silica, and carbon, which is a very sophisticated stuff. It's unignited nanothermite, and there's up to 10 tons of this material in its unignited form. So there must have been a lot more in the ignited form, which caused another 10 tons of all of these microspheres throughout the World Trade Center dust.
Okay, so let's take this narrative. Then we have Osama bin Laden masterminding this attack. One question will be, okay, why? So he went after the Pentagon. We know that. We're not sure what he was going after in Pennsylvania. He was making an attempt maybe at the White House, but mission accomplished. I mean, he hit a small portion of the Pentagon. Mission accomplished. With these World Trade Center towers in Manhattan, if it sounds like you've got incredible evidence showing that somebody had gone into those buildings before those planes hit the towers and planted explosive devices, how is it that's being overlooked? Let's just go again. Let's continue with that Osama bin Laden narrative and say that he had a secret stealth team. Military trained, grade, whatever, gone in there, and he planted those devices. How is it that the commission is missing that?
Well, these are three of the most highly secure buildings outside the Pentagon. I mean, Building 7 itself was was packed with four-letter agencies, CIA, Department of Defense, Securities and Exchange Commission, lost thousands of files related to hundreds of cases it was actively pursuing against big companies like Enron, WorldCom. But it looks like the 9/11 Commission was guided to not ask specific questions that even the family members who were responsible for forming or making sure that there was a 9/11 Commission happening at all, forcing the Bush administration into that, which happened a year later, it looks like they largely were co-opted. Certainly the results of their investigation, as we mentioned, co-opted by Philip Zelikow, who wrote the commission report that none of them have faith in, and many want a new investigation, at least the chairs. So how could it be overlooked? Well, NIST and FEMA appear to be in the position of consciously overlooking the specific evidence that we have so much proof of, and that the how would they get explosives into the building? You suggested maybe the stealth team of Osama bin Laden. Well, given the high security of these buildings and the fact that they were terrorist targets, it's just highly doubtful that that happened. But we don't have an opinion on that. We don't speculate specifically. We just want a real investigation that will get to the bottom. One that might answer the question would be an investigation into Ace Elevator, which had a contract to modernize the elevators in the Twin Towers during the 9 months prior to 9/11, the largest elevator modernization in the world, documented by Elevator World in March of 2000. And this could have given a team of operatives, probably not Al-Qaeda, the inside operatives, access to the core columns and beams that surround the elevator shafts. So we certainly want an investigation there. I mean, we're talking about dozens and dozens of tons of high-tech incendiaries and explosives here, the explosives being responsible for the lateral discharge of very heavy 4-ton structural steel sections that are sent laterally, as I mentioned, at 600 feet, 60 miles an hour, laterally. This is supposed to be a gravitational collapse. Gravity works down, not out. So we've got both going on here, explosives and incendiaries, apparently. And a real investigation will reveal the perpetrators that were responsible. But until we get a technical investigation, everybody just cries out, oh, you just have a political agenda. Well, no, let's set the conspiracy theories aside and focus on the science of what really happened in an investigation that is not co-opted.
Yeah, exactly. What would be, it sounds like someone is deceiving the American people, perhaps, have been deceived on at least one level. Like you're saying, regardless of the Osama bin Laden, you know, whoever has done this, it seems like the commission report has not gone after some of these real gritty elements of science and fact. And so, again, someone is pulling the wool, attempting to pull the wool over the American public's eyes. Let's just go into that for a second. It doesn't do us any good because we need to stick to the facts. But why would that be happening? Why would there be a cover-up? Go ahead.
Well, who benefited from 9/11 is kind of the question behind the question here, because how could such a thing happen? Why would they do it? And how did they not get caught? Well, what it does, 9/11 awakens the American public up to a reality that they have been insulated from, and that is who controls and what level of control is there? Who controls the media that could have done real reporting and could have had this evidence displayed for all to see easily, because we've had it out there for 12 years now. And so, but it's not been played out there. I mean, we have a 45-minute interview on C-SPAN. And when that slipped through, it turns out to be their most watched video ever on their entire website.
Wow.
That 45 minutes. So you can just Google Gage on C-SPAN, 9/11. So it's got almost a million views now. So that is that's what happens when we get people's attention on the actual science. They wake up. That's why we have 3,000 architects. The reason we don't have 300,000 architects is because we have a hard time getting this information in front of them. Once we do, we've got them on the waking up path, then they realize that, oh, gee, in order for this to happen, the American Institute of Architects would have had to have insulated us, for instance, from the third worst structural failure in modern history, World Trade Center 7, which most architects and structural engineers know nothing about. So we've been insulated by our own favorite institution, the AIA, and we've been insulated by CNN, ABC, MSNBC, all the rest. And we've gotten, it's the alternative media. That's like you, for instance. Thank you very much for having the courage to put this out there, because there is criticism when this is brought to bear, because it's not popular. It is not a subject which wants to be handled. It's not easily handled. It implies that there's a much greater conspiracy out there of silence about the truth, as well as those who perpetrated and organized and executed the 9/11 operation and keeping it quiet. It's a big deal. And you've got big money players involved as well. Silverstein, for instance, who Larry Silverstein developed the project in a bid which should not have gone through. It wasn't the lowest bid for the remaining
interesting.
Six buildings that he bought and for $3.2 billion, including the Twin Towers, just happened 6 weeks prior to 9/11. Uh-huh. So all this setup and manipulation and movement was happening. He had already owned Building 7. But then he puts all this terrorist insurance, massive, it walks away with $5.7 billion, and he had only put $125 million of his own money into the deal. So yes, he did very, very well. And these buildings were white elephants. They needed $5 to $10 billion in asbestos abatement, which was required by law, and communications equipment and electrical and mechanical systems were failing in the building.
So
they couldn't get tenants.
So what has happened? What has happened here? Is it appropriate to use a word like a false flag? Is this tied into the banking system? Is what's the kind of the large scheme that's happening here? That like you're saying, that these major, now I've spoken frequently on this program in the 80s. You have basically all the major media outlets controlled by something like 80 to 90 different companies. But today, 2018, that number has dwindled down to about six different companies controlling all the mass media. So the way that we as Americans receive our media is becoming micronized rather than macronized, if I've got the understanding of those two words correct. So what really, in your view, has happened here? What's kind of the larger picture at play, in your opinion?
Well, let's look at what happened after 9/11 and see what this false flag won in a series of false flags throughout history, which have started wars being manipulated by governments to manipulate their people to support these foreign wars. We have the invasion of two Middle Eastern countries. Was that because of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq? No. George Bush acknowledges that they weren't really there. They were never there. And what about Osama bin Laden? By some researchers, he was never ever caught. He died of kidney failure back in 2002, according to David Ray Griffin and many, many other researchers. But he wrote the book on it. Did Osama bin Laden die? Something like that. Anyway, what have we got going on in Afghanistan, which some researchers suggest that was responsible for up to 90% of the world's supply of heroin, mm-hmm. and that the UN announced that the profits from that illicit trade exceeded the oil companies all put together, wow. their profits. And some have pointed out that the pipeline for gas from the Stan countries through Afghanistan through Pakistan was being negotiated by the Taliban with another company in Argentina instead of Dutch Shell Oil. So these are among the mega millions and billions of dollars that can influence these kinds of decisions. The oil from Iraq, for instance, some researchers have found that it is not under the control of Iraqis at all, which shouldn't be a surprise. Anyway, I don't research those things, but you asked the question, so I'm helping your listeners to become aware of some of the bigger picture issues, like, for instance, a $240 billion bond heist that occurred on 9/11 in the World Trade Center as a result of its destruction. These bonds, which were coming due that day, did not have to come due. And there were gold heists going on in the basements of the towers L, because there was a huge vault under Building 6, the Treasury Department location. So lots of shenanigans going on, and I highly encourage people to look at the video 9/11, Follow the Trillions, and that is by James Corbett. So there's other resources for answers to these kinds of questions.
Thank you, Richard. Yeah, I started this program about 2 years ago. It's going on 2 years after the South Florida area was hit with the Zika scare, a virus that originates from the Uganda forest in Africa, and the local municipality was spraying a pesticide on the population called Nailid. And as I listened to these folks that were irate in the town hall meeting with the CDC on the line and various other representatives, I thought, you know, there's roughly 300 people in this town hall, and there's the mayor and his commissioners, and to me they just seemed like they were being puppets, being pulled by strings with dollar bills at the end. And I thought this sounds absolutely ridiculous. You've got these completely irate citizens of Miami Beach that have taken their time to protest against this. So what is it? They're saying it's illegal in the European Union, that it's been banned, it's a neurotoxin, and everything I started researching verified that their argument had complete validity, and that there was. And I even wrote to Lancet in Medical Journal and the New England Journal of Medicine and tried to seek out some expert advice, and nobody could draw a link that Zika was a direct cause of this microcephaly, which was the case in Recife in Brazil. So, you know, from there I begin this show, and it kind of it reverberates in some of these different other discussions, and just like you, I feel that Americans are not receiving the information that they should be receiving via mass media. But let's now, and I want to throw this out there that and I speak to him. I speak about him frequently. He's now deceased, but he was a former Hoover fellow at Stanford University. His name is Dr. Anthony Sutton, and he dived into World War II primarily, and the Rockefeller and some of these different banks that were funding really both sides of the conflict to kind of manipulate the outcome. But let's get back to what listeners can do to support you and get involved in trying to get this commission reopened. What's your advice? What is the best thing that the average American can do to get behind at least opening some of this up and re-questioning what has been given to us in that report?
We've got to create a groundswell of public rage against the lies that we've been fed, the manipulation that has been done here, and it's a grassroots movement growing by millions, but it's a slow growth, and we've got to have legislation that some awakened Congress persons will introduce, and we've drafted it already. It's called the Bobby McIlvain Act. It is sponsored by Bob McIlvain, whose son Bobby died in the South Tower as a result of the explosions that we've been talking about here. And this calls for a new investigation into the destruction of all three towers. It is modeled after the Benghazi Act, and the House or Senate can panel a committee to investigate, a select committee. And we've for the last year and a half, we've been having our supporters, thousands of them around the country, we've been encouraging them to go to their congressperson and bring the Bobby McIlvain Act, bring the evidence, tell the story, show the evidence, and get their congressperson to introduce this act. So that is just one avenue of truth manifestation that we can... We're working on. Another one is the filing of the grand jury petition to the U.S. District Attorney in Manhattan. And on September 11th, there will be a following up that filing of that petition, forcing them to honor the terms of that original filing, which we will be in default of the law if they fail. So there's a lot of things going on in Washington, D.C. We will have a rally with speakers on the subject of 9/11, including Cynthia McKinney, a former congressperson, who will be talking about the concept of power cells, which uses common issues that people on both sides of the left-right false paradigm can come together on, such as 9/11, because we draw from both sides of the spectrum equally, and it's about truth, right? Not left, right? Not Republican versus Democrat. So this is very exciting. We'll be on the mall at 2 o'clock, September 11th, we'll have some other exciting speakers there as well.
Cynthia joins me next week, Richard. In closing, I want to read a quote from Michael Newman and get your response or your thoughts. Michael Newman, NIST spokesman, is quoted as saying, basically, gravity and the utter force of the upper floors force the towers down. If you have 20 floors of mass suddenly released, as it goes downward, it picks up more mass and more force. And yes, you can have a building collapse in 10 seconds. And yes, it is physically possible. We believe that 3 years of hard scientific technical investigation based around a tremendous amount of evidence and confirmed by many physicists will give you the same conclusion. What do you have to say about that, Richard? What are your thoughts?
Well, that whole theory is based on Zdenek Bazant, a structural engineer from Chicago Northwestern University, who submitted a four-page, very detailed, very difficult to read and understand even for structural engineers. He submitted that paper just 2 days after 9/11. The whole rest of the country is in shock, and he's cranking out calculations that must have taken him months to prepare. And NIST relies on these calculations as the only analytical support that has ever been done. The rest of it is just speculation, like you just heard from Michael Newman, who is with who is the public person at NIST, spokesperson. So the problem here is that in that original calculation, he had to fake it six ways from Sunday. First, he exaggerated the amount of mass above the point of jet plane impacts by a factor of three or four. He decreased the capability of the columns below the point of jet plane impacts by a factor of three or four. He completely eliminated an entire story of the building, which had 300 columns in it, completely eliminated them from his calculation, allowing the upper floor to fall magically on the lower floor in order to develop a dynamic impact. This is complete fraud from beginning to end, and we point that out in our webinar, 9/11, An Architect's Guide, Part 1, 2, and 3. And this is free on YouTube for anybody. In fact, just Google 9/11, An Architect's Guide, and you can see this three-part series, as well as free on YouTube is our DVD, I mean our landmark documentary, 9/11 Explosive Evidence Experts Speak Out, which shows the same problem in several different ways by many, many different experts. Just search Experts Speak Out. It comes right up on YouTube.
Excellent. Ladies and gentlemen, Richard Gage. Richard, any closing comments for listeners?
I encourage everybody to follow up on this information. Yes, it's difficult. Yes, it'll challenge your very worldview. But yes, it's the truth. And do you want to be hiding in this with your head in the sand? No. So at least look at the information and develop with critical thinking your own opinion on it, so that you can be in the position of having an informed opinion rather than repeating what your peers and your government and your media is feeding you.
Excellent work.
And then do something about it.
Thank you. Thank you, Richard. Pleasure to have you on the program. Thanks for joining. Looking forward to inviting you back on in the near future.
Thanks, Ian. I appreciate it so much.
Richard Gage, ladies and gentlemen, Richard Gage, okay? He's just a normal American like you, like me, like so many of us, 300 million of us, I suppose. American Institute of Architects. He's worked on, you heard it, very big, large scale projects in Vegas, and something doesn't add up. So, what does he do? He looks in to 9/11, and this is what he has found. And if any of this resonates with you, do your own investigation. Look into this. I will be right back with you. I'll take a short break. You've tuned in to Discussions of Truth with Ian Trottier.
We'll be right back.
Metallica, Seek and Destroy. That is exactly what I admonish each and every one of you to do, to corruption, to deceit. Do you think it could not come from your government? Think again! You know, here's a concept for you. You're born into an aristocratic family. You're the head of a nation. Your family, maybe your father's a king. Maybe your father's a queen. When you walk the streets, go down to your local grocery store, pub, theater, the taxes all of those people pay, a large percentage go to you and your family. Just put yourself, visualize yourself in that life. Possible? To a very, very, very small percentage of folks that walk this planet. But they're sometimes referred to as the one percenters, something like that. Would you have a problem with that? Well, evidently, George Washington did. Evidently, Alexander Hamilton did. Evidently, Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, Samuel Adams. So the question is, do you? Oh, but Ian, the United States doesn't have a king or a queen. Every week, I aim to deliver you a message that gets you to at least say, wow, let me look into that a little more. Because what you do have as an American citizen is something called a Federal Reserve, which is a banking system, evidently, without the evidence, because it's a private organization. It's not a federal organization. I'll repeat that. It's not a federal organization. It's controlled by shareholders that have international interests. Could. The Queen of England, for instance, be one of those shareholders. You wouldn't know if she was. And that's the beauty of the Federal Reserve. So if 9/11 was a false flag meant to deceive you, to cause a war on terror, you wouldn't know about it. But what you can do is you can at least, if you think, for instance, some of this evidence that Richard and the architects of engineers involved, over 3,000 involved in what he's doing, if you think some of that might possibly be accurate, then get behind him and try to crack a lid that is ever so quickly being closed on you. I stand for freedom of speech. I stand for freedom of press. I stand for freedom of religion. And if you don't, then I recommend that you do. Because it is freedoms like those that has made this country great. And like Richard said, it's not about being a Democrat. It's not about being a Republican. It's about being honest and truthful. Next week, we bring on program Cynthia McKinney, former Congresswoman, U.S. Congresswoman, and first black woman to be elected to represent that state in the U.S. House of Representatives. I've been your host for the weekly program, Discussion to Truth. You've turned in to Win-Win Radio. And until next week, be awesome.